Greece, the birthplace of democracy, European philosophy, and the Olympic Games. But more recently, a country associated with a crippling debt crisis, severe austerity measures, and economic collapse. In 2015, Greece also found itself on the front lines of a refugee crisis. My name is Iman Amrani, and I've come here to Athens to meet two young activists who want to bring about radical change, addressing issues from education and inequality to racism and migrant rights. Welcome to Generation Change, a global series that attempts to understand and challenge the ideas that are mobilizing youth around the world. We're currently in Veronas, which is where you grew up, right? Was there anything about growing up here that particularly motivated you to go into activism?
I participated in student government since fifth grade, actually representing the students in many important issues, such as raising money for people from lower economic backgrounds for students to participate in the school trips. Helping people from poorer families than mine to not be left behind.
And your parents, were they politically active?
Yeah, both my parents are trade unionists. But from my early ages, I remember my parents telling me about how to respect every person, no matter their background, their status.
You're a co-founder of a youth organization called Protovolia Neon. Could you tell me where the name comes from and what your main objectives are?
Mm-hmm. So actually, Protovolia Neon means youth initiative. Protovolia means initiative and Neon means youth. We focus on organizing people on issues such as LGBTQ rights, women's rights, human rights in general, but also the educational crisis and the climate crisis as well. We organize people on the street level with demonstrations and strikes, but also organize a lot of open dialogues with our members and young people in general to talk about the important stuff that our generation faces. And we are now starting to do some lobbying work, actually pressing politicians to implement agendas that work for young people as well.
Protovolia Neon isn't aligned to a political party. How would you describe the values of it for somebody that's in a different country?
I think that we lean to the progressive left. We have some specific issues that are not like negotiable for us, but we try to keep the dialogue open and actually negotiate with people on our ideals. Also, we need to show people that you have to pressure these institutions and the people who hold office to actually work for your interests.
So, Rosa, you were born and raised in Greece, but your parents originally come from Albania. What's that been like for you?
Well, in Greece, the fact that you are born in the country or that you immigrate in an early age doesn't automatically make you a Greek citizen. So, although I was born in Greece, I was considered an Albanian citizen until 2017, which meant that I had zero civic rights, but absolutely no public and political representation.
And how are Albanians perceived here in Greece?
So Albanians migrated in the 90s after the dissolution of the hybrid communist state. We are currently the biggest migratory minority. We have been traditionally targeted by the media. We have been perceived as dangerous, as criminals, as somebody to watch out for. And in a way, it hasn't made it easy also for us to assimilate in the Greek society.
you've been involved in anti-fascist movements, and I wanted to know what it was about your life experiences that kind of shaped your journey into activism.
The moment I started being actively involved with the Antifa movement was when I was 13 years old. That coincided a little bit with the beginning of the financial crisis in Greece. If I could pinpoint a certain moment in time that really sparked my activist flame, it would be when the police killed a 15-year-old boy. His name was Alexis Grigoropoulos in Athens. And that sparked a big movement of demonstration that moved from Athens and spread all over Greece. It spoke about our struggles, but also represented many different topics that we were fighting for, from police brutality to representation to essentially a better life.
So, with all of this background, I'd like to know a bit about the work that you do with migrants particularly.
Yes, so we are a non-profit association. We are a collective. What we're doing in a few words is illustrating and combating xenophobia, racism, and all sorts of social discrimination. And we lack representation of people like us in politics and government and higher, let's say, like aspects of society. So we are really keen on promoting that that element.
Thank you, Petros and Rosa, for being here today. Both of you have grown up during a time of enormous social and economic upheaval in Greece. Rosa, how do you think that this has defined things for your generation?
Well, I think when somebody's faced with adversity, there's most probably two ways you can go about. One of them is to, you know, put your head down and let it destroy you. And the other one is to push against it and somehow let it define you positively. I think, because I come from the generation that was facing the financial crisis and then was hit with what they call the refugee crisis, I think we were confronted with a lot of different diverging structures and phenomena, but most of us did come through more resilient. Then again, I cannot admit the truth, which is that a lot of us faced with this adversity, we had to fly. Like, I have to say that a lot of my peers, my classmates, people of my generation did leave Greece.
I think that we came stronger after this crisis that we face as generations. Something that I have to add is the loss of faith in the democratic institutions that our generation is facing. And that is something really difficult for people to understand, that these democratic institutions can work for you. And something that we need is stronger representation of people of our age in the parliament and in any local or national or regional place that decisions are being made.
It's interesting that you say that young people don't have trust in democratic institutions, because the last government actually lowered the voting age to 17. And I wanted to know if you think that means that young people have more of an active voice in politics in Greece.
I think that it gave us a sense of responsibility, because it was the first time that we got to vote. But the problem is that the age to get elected is still the same. It's 25 years old. So that doesn't change anything when it comes to representation.
And Rosa, I wanted to ask you, your experience has been different. So could you explain a bit about what your civic rights have been like in Greece?
Yeah, there is a difference between being able to participate in the system and have your voice heard and actually being represented in the system. Coming from what they call as a second generation migrant in Greece, which basically means that you were either born from migrant parents in Greece or you migrated at an early age and you have lived most of your life in Greece. So you have all of the obligations as a proper Greek citizen or taxpayer, but none of the civic rights. And I think one of the most important things that we need to understand is that you cannot vote. I think I come from a generation that has zero visibility in the Greek society. And that is exactly what we're trying to change with Horizons, to put Greeks like me in the center of this public and political arena.
When you talk about not feeling visible, do you mean specifically coming from a migrant community or not having Greek nationality in the first place? Or do you mean generally for the generation?
I think it represents the generation of people that have migratory heritage. And the invisibility and invisibility that I like to play with terms also comes from the fact that you are very visible in certain terms. And that is when people call you the immigrant and the criminal and the foreigner. But then you're invisible when it comes to anybody taking into account what you think.
There are lots of specific things that have happened in Greece, so we call them crises, but also a global pandemic. And I wanted to know how all these things have affected the education system and the experience of students like yourself.
Well, we have no basic staff that we need, no basic infrastructure that we need in our schools and in our universities. And the problem is that the current government is actually trying to turn the discussion into a very different direction, because they focus on security and on police on campus, while at the same moment, we don't have some basic stuff that universities all around Europe and all around the world have. It was specifically the lowering of budget during the crisis, especially the gap that widened between lower and upper classes when it comes to private spending, because in Greece, need to have to get some private tutoring to get into university, and you know, it becomes very disproportionate for people for working class people to be able to help their kids, to prepare their children to get into universities.
I think it's a way of the current conservative government to privatize everything. We've seen that happen with healthcare, and now I think it's a very direct approach towards education. I think you might agree with me. We are very proud to have a public educational system in Greece. For us, it's important to keep it public, and the Conservative government is trying to do the exactly opposite.
We were just talking about student politics, and I think around the world, student politics skews to the left. But more generally in Greece, the far right has gained popularity, most notably with the neo-Nazi group, the Golden Dawn. Why do you think that's been the case here?
When you have the diversion crisis and you have a space, a country, let's say Greece, that is attacked by many fronts, then it's also a ground that creates different possibilities. One of them is for populist narratives, for xenophobic narratives, for it creates an opportunity for extreme ideas to come forth, because people are struggling, right? And on top of the financial crisis that started in 2008, in 2015, you had what they call the refugee crisis. So I think the system itself gave space to Golden Dawn to exist, because in that way they wanted to mainstream extreme ideas that we actually see today in the Conservative government. We cannot lie, there are specific people in the structures of the current government that are also in the right side of the spectrum, right? So, yeah, I think it gained popularity because it needed to express the struggle.
In October of 2020, the Golden Dawn was finally criminalized and some of the leaders were sent to prison. Is that the end of the story when it comes to the Golden Dawn and the neo-Nazi aspect of the far right in Greece?
We do not have them in the parliament. They are not in the strong public position that they were. They are not broadcasting half of our days in our mainstream media, but in reality, they still exist. Not all of them were jailed. Not all of their ideas and narratives are buried somewhere beneath, right? You still have their supporters around. I was talking with some people, they still gather around publicly. People are not ashamed to say that they support the Golden Dawn. And maybe when they become, then we can talk about it ending. But it's definitely not the case right now.
Do you agree with that, that people aren't really ashamed to be associated with the Golden Dawn?
Mm-hmm. I think that the public, after the judicial decision in 2020, understood how dangerous Golden Dawn was, especially after the killing of Pavlos Fissas, a famous Greek musician, a famous Greek rapper. The people understood that it wasn't just a right-wing party. It was a neo-Nazi criminal group that was doing some criminal and terrorist activities. But the ideology is still there. We have one of their members creating a new party in Greece.
In 2015, over 1 million refugees and migrants landed on the shores of Greece. And Rosa, you went to work on the island of Samos. What did that experience show you?
Yeah, I mean, that was definitely a defining experience. I think it is still hard for me to express what I went through, But for sure, it touched me and it made me understand that if us as immigrants had a really tough life and a struggle, these people are having it double and worse. And that comes from the fact of what they go through when they are in the camps. Back in the day, the camp was open. Today, they are closed security facilities.
And international NGOs like Oxfam and Amnesty International have accused the Greek government of illegal pushbacks of refugees across the border and prison-like refugee centres. I wanted to know if you think that the Greek public support these measures.
I don't think that the Greek public support these measures, but I think that there is a lack of information when it comes to the whole refugee issue in Greece. Because the media is now covering other issues, such as the gas prices or the electricity prices or the war in Ukraine. So I think that especially the mainstream media have been trying to, you know, change the dialogue and take it as far away as they can from.
And why is that? Because the government had turned camps from spaces that you could walk into to prison conditions. So there is, I think for me, it's a targeted approach to give out as little information as possible. And actually, when there is information in alternative media, it's being blocked. And those journalists are being even tapped and followed by the government.
And I want to circle back to one key point on the media. In the recent International Press Freedom Index, it's published by Reporters Without Borders, Greece came last of all European Union countries, behind Bulgaria and Hungary. Were you surprised about that?
Frankly speaking, not. But contextually, if we see Greece and the media landscape since the financial crisis, what you observe is that there's been really strong defunding of the media services. So what media does now is that they rely on public funding. What happens there is that the public funding goes to the hands of the media that are supporting the conservative government. So you have a system that is not fair. You have a system that is not safe. You have journalists that I know of personally, investigative journalists being tapped by the government. So I think it's a matter of understanding that the ownership and the safety are really, really going downhill.
And I think it's important to note that the government has refuted Reporters Without Borders findings. And they've said that the majority of newspapers in Greece exercise fierce criticism against the government. Petros, what do you think about that response from the government?
It has nothing to do with the reality that we are facing in Greece. Because the press and the media here are operated by the 1% of the country, I may say, who have big ties with the oil business in the shipping industry. So for me especially, when it comes to my climate activism, it was really difficult going to a media outlet talking about climate change and talking about how these shipping companies are destroying local communities. They wouldn't report that because they are owned by the people who are creating the problems.
And across the world, young people are turning to social media instead for news, information, anything really. And I wanted to know if there was any examples in Greece that highlighted how certain platforms have been used to amplify issues or bring about positive change.
Our organization, for instance, gained popularity during the pandemic through social media, especially Instagram, because it gave us the opportunity to actually talk about issues that were not being talked about in mainstream media, because we talked about the education crisis and how during the pandemic we had inequality between people who could afford having like two computers at home, having internet access, because not everybody did.
I wanted to echo what we actually do as well. We use social media to bring forth social change, and it's actually working. For example, we had cases of refugee students who have been denied asylum. And we really pushed a big social media campaign on Instagram and Facebook. We went there and intervened in his school. And what we actually saw is that through the sharing and reposting of that audiovisual file and our narrative and our posts, we actually managed to contribute into a whole system of support that got that kid his asylum approved. It was a really interesting experience for us because we realized that we have a lot of power. Mainstream media doesn't give us the space, but social media creates it for us.
This show is called Generation Change, and I do want to know from both of you how you define your generation compared to that of your parents.
So I think that we are one of the most progressive generations. But at the same time, with social media, sometimes we get the illusion that we are active enough. But that's not the case. We need to be more active. We need to be more organized because our parents gave a lot of fights, especially during the dictatorship in Greece. We need people to get to the streets, to organize in order to actually change something, in order to be represented more. But I'm optimistic when it comes to my generation being, politically active.
And Rosa, your experience has been quite different to that of your parents because they came over here from another country. How do you see your worldview as being different to theirs?
Well, I think this is true for most kids that come from migrant parents. We are raised with a bunch of syndromes. You have to come to terms with the fact that your parents have sacrificed most of their lives and liberties and freedoms for you to enjoy some of what you consider as, the basic human rights, like access to education, the access to proper housing. I grew up being poor for a certain part of my life. So I know that my parents had to go through that struggle way more than I did. So yeah, I feel privileged, I feel honored, and I feel thankful for their sacrifice. But my job is to make sure that my generation doesn't have to do that for the next one.
Petros, Protovalia is nonpartisan. It is outside of the system at the moment. Do you think that in the future you're gonna have to work within the system in order to bring about change?
Sometimes we have to work with the system at that time, because especially when it comes to talking with members of the parliament or representatives, we get into conversations with them. But being a partisan organization would be very, very difficult for us, because at the moment we cannot fight ourselves being represented and our interests being represented by a specific party. That is a very huge problem for our generation. We need to be represented and heard more, and we need a political party that will talk about our problems enough, especially the education system and the working rights issue that people are facing in our generation.
I also want to ask you this question, Rosa. I know that previously you have been very anti-system, but now you work in Brussels, which is the heart of the European system. How did that happen? And is that just an inevitability of getting a bit older?
Definitely. I think the moment you understand that by screaming on the outside, you bring forth a specific and minimized change, comes also in hand in hand with being a bit older. Yes, as you mature, I think at least for me, and that doesn't have to be the case for everybody, I understood that in order to change a system, you need to first empower yourself and protect yourself and then enter that system in order to change it from within. And I think that's how you change it, by bringing people like us in position of power so that they can influence the new legislation and the new decisions that are going to then influence the whole society. I cannot find any other way.
And finally, after all of the things we've talked about, all of the crises, all of the issues, all of the problems, why do you care about change? And do you think that it is realistic and possible?
I think that I do, because we've seen great examples of change being made. But it needs a lot of work, and it's a lot of people understanding that they have to be active enough, especially in Greece, is that we have been going through so many crises that we are powerful enough to actually fight for our basic rights, fight for our representation. And I'm optimistic that our generation is going to be able to understand and be more inclusive in a way of making change possible for everybody.
All of my life I've been told that I cannot do things. It starts from being an immigrant, then it goes to being a woman, then it goes to being weak or poor. And in reality, here we stand today. And I think that I am a living proof that you can start from nothing and push against the system, push against every obstacle it brings you. And there is way more brilliant examples than me, but this is what we have today. I feel like I'm here to empower people and sometimes represent them. So in a way, I find this motive because there is a lot of work to be done.
Petros, Rosa, thank you so much for being here today. That's all for this episode of Generation Change here in Greece.